show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Michard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ground ball to the right side. Wendell on to first, and that does it. And as painful an opening day defeat for the Red Sox as you could remember, as they fall here today, 6-4, the final score, and a ball game that never should have gotten away.
Oh, you get that right, Dave O'Brien. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, open up the phone lines right away, will you? 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. We'll be with you until 7 o'clock. We were on the air last night when that thing was going on. I don't know what else to call it. That thing in St. Petersburg, because that's what it was. Complete total meltdown by the Red Sox on opening day against the Tampa Bay Rays. I want to relive that eighth inning. I also want to talk about Alex Cora, because he's at the center of the whole thing, really, Cora is. His decisions in the eighth inning, rookie manager, the bullpen, do you have an eighth inning guy? There are a million elements to that whole thing in the eighth inning. So I want to get through the particulars of it. Because what I didn't love about Cora as much as anything was what he said after the game about the whole thing. Okay, it just felt to me like Cora wasn't really sure what he wanted to do once the game started to unravel. He made a plan before the game, which is clear. He absolutely made a plan before the game. But then he, I think, stuck to it to a fault. And we'll give you the particulars here in just a second. But again, 617-779-0985. Just a killer of a loss. Murray, you want the good news first?
Please.
Okay, let me give you the good news. And you heard them mention this during the broadcast, or maybe it was after the broadcast. I've heard people say it. The last time the Red Sox lost a game like that on opening day, or one of the last times, 2003 in Tampa, Carl Crawford homered off of Chad Fox. Right? That was 15 years ago now.
Bullpen by committee, Tony.
That was the bullpen by committee year. That's right. And you know what happened that year, Jimmy?
They had issues all throughout, and they lost in the ALCS.
They ended up acquiring every reliever who wasn't nailed down.
Yeah, that was a Byung-Hyun Kim year, right?
Good job, Murray.
Scott Williamson.
Scott Williamson. Alan Embry.
Alan Embry was the year before by Mike Port.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, I was wrong about that one then. Embry was already in that bullpen. But they did. They went out and got Williamson to close after they had already gotten Byung-Hyun Kim to close. And then in 03, it all started working. And then Grady Little wouldn't use him in New York against the Yankees. But we don't need to relive that part of it.
Well, Pedro.
There was another one going way back where years ago the Red Sox acquired Lee Smith to come in and close games. His first game, he gave up a home run to Alan Trammell to blow it at Fenway Park. The good news, Murray, and this is good news, both of those teams went to the playoffs. Okay? So there is no...
That's going to bug me. Was that 88?
It was in the late 80s. Okay. Yeah. It might have been around... It might have been 90.
Okay.
Right in that era. But both of those teams went to the playoffs. In any case, yesterday, complete meltdown. And before we get to your calls, I want to get to Cora's commentary after the game, or comments after the game, because frankly, I felt like he was inconsistent with why Craig Kimbrell didn't get in the game. And Kimbrell was the obvious one to point at. In fact, Dave O'Brien said it during the broadcast that Cora said he would use Kimbrell in the eighth. They got into a jam in the eighth, and then Kimbrell didn't come in. In fact, Kimbrell never got up. At the same time, Bobby Pointer, a left-hander, who was a 15th-round draft pick a number of years ago, pitched in Double-A last year, had a good spring, made the team as a power lefty, could have come in to face two lefties in the eighth, and he didn't get into the game. But Kimbrell was really the focus. Okay, so Cora was asked about Kimbrell's absence from the game on a few different occasions. The very first question he got was about Kimbrell from John Miller of WBZ AM, Johnny Miller. And here was his answer to the first question.
We talked about it before the game. I'm not going to put him in that spot right now because we feel he's ready, but I don't think it's fair for him to come in a situation, you know, it's not a clean inning. It is something that we map it out, we talk about it, and we stick to it.
Okay, so again, we didn't want to put him in. We didn't feel it was fair to him. You know, we wanted a clean inning. Okay, we wanted a clean inning. Not fair to put him in when it isn't a clean inning. So when you hear that answer, you say, oh, all right, so when you talked about putting him in the eighth inning, you meant at the start of the eighth that he would pitch two innings or even one, but that it had to be at the beginning of the eighth. So then the second time he was asked about it was by Dan Shaughnessy of the Globe. Here's that exchange.
Now, so are you saying that since Kimball didn't start the eighth, he couldn't come in the eighth?
No, couldn't come in. We decided he's not coming in, you know, as of now. As of now.
When did you decide that?
We decided before the game.
Okay, so then Shaughnessy's question to him says, oh, well, so he followed it up. And then Cora basically said, no, we decided we meant we weren't going to use him in the eighth at all. So then the clean inning thing had nothing to do with it, right? Like, it had nothing to do with a clean inning. What was he talking about the clean inning at all for? If he said we decided before the game we're not going to bring him in the eighth, then why even mention the clean inning at all?
No, the explanation makes no sense.
But do you follow me, Maria?
Yeah, I did.
I'm not making this up,
no,
right?
No, you're not, no.
So, Jimmy, again, play the first one if you would, just so... Because to me, when you hear that first answer, it makes it sound like I wasn't going to bring him in with guys on base. And the word that Corey used after the game was traffic. There was traffic on the bases. Play it again, Jimmy.
We talked about it before the game. I'm not going to put him in that spot right now because we feel he's ready. But I don't think it's fair for him to come in a situation, you know, it's not a clean inning. It's something that we map it out, we talk about it, and we stick to it.
Okay, so again, not a clean inning. We feel he's ready. Then Jimmy plays Shaughnessy again, number two.
Yeah, so are you saying that since Kimball didn't start the eighth, he couldn't come in the eighth?
No, couldn't come in. We decided he's not coming in, you know, as of now.
When did you decide that?
We decided before the game.
Okay, so now I'm confused. We decided before the game that we weren't going to bring him in, so the clean inning had nothing to do with it. And then finally, we get even more information when he gets to the third time he was asked about it. Jimmy, play that one.
Yeah, he was available. Yeah, but for where we at right now, physically, and it's not, you know, it doesn't make, you know, for what we're trying to shoot, what we're trying to accomplish here, we need him for the long run and not for just B1-0 and an opening day. So, you know, if that situation presents probably later, you know, and we're talking about probably 15 days or something like that, or before when he's really ready, he'll be in that situation.
Okay, so there he says maybe in 15 days when he's really ready. I thought he was ready. He was available, right? You said he was ready. No, he's ready. We just didn't want to use him in the middle of the inning. Then it was, no, we just, you know, we're going to make sure we manage him in such a way that we take into account the long term. Now, I think the last answer he gave is closest to the real thing. In that all they told us all spring was that Kimbrel was working out at Babson College with Matt Noon, who's one of the BP pitchers they have. I think Matt's the head coach at Babson. Still, he's been there a while. So that Kimbrel was working out with the Babson team and that he was getting all the work he needed. He was going to be ready to go. He got to camp, no problem. Then they say, well, no, he's not quite there. It's a long season. And yet, but at the same time, they're saying they didn't want to bring him in the middle of the inning. And it, when I heard the whole thing, it just felt to me like Cora was all over the map. Jimmy, what do you got?
Could it be that he was referencing using Kimbrel for four outs? In other words, he didn't want to bring him in the eighth to get rid of the traffic because that's a high leverage situation. And then if it's too high leverage, he's got nobody for the ninth. So Kimbrel would have had to get four outs to end that ball game, and he wasn't ready to get four outs.
I mean, I guess it's possible, Jimmy. I just don't understand why Cora didn't say, look, guys, we are going to use him in the eighth. We're just not going to do it out of the gate.
Right, because the more he talked, the more convoluted the whole thing got.
So I think the questions were poor.
Okay, so so now look, English is his second language, but nonetheless, he commands it well enough for me to, you know, for us to get information out of there. And I do think in this case that he was all over the map a little. And if you looked at his face on the top step of the dugout when the thing was unraveling, it did feel like Cora thought, well, now what? And I think on top of it, there's another question, and that is, who is the Red Sox eighth inning guy? And the answer is, they don't have one. And shame on me for not putting more emphasis on this. We'll get to this a little bit later in the show. But, you know, the absence of an eighth inning guy is a real thing. I want to take a call before we break, and we'll continue with your calls here in a minute, but we'll get to the calls here first right away. Matt's in New Hampshire. Matt, go.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Good.
Good. So I was wondering, do you think we're going to make a move for a reliever before the break, or do you think Dombrowski's just going to stick with what we got for now?
Okay, so Matt, just quickly, what do you think?
Honestly, I don't think he's going to do anything. I think he's just going to let it ride. I'd like to see something made, but if you're asking me, I think he's going to stick with it.
Okay, so look, the right answer is that it's too early. And Tyler Thornburg is a variable here, too, right? They acquired Thornburg last year to be one of their primary setup men. He didn't pitch the whole year. He had thoracic outlet surgery. He is rehabilitating in Florida and may be ready in a month or so. I mean, I don't think it's going to be before that. But if Thornburg comes in and pitches like a true setup man, maybe he's the eighth inning guy. Maybe one of these guys evolves, although I doubt it. I'm no Kelly fan. I'm no Barnes fan. Who am I leaving out? I'm no Carson Smith fan. Carson Smith feels like a matchup guy to me on right-handed batters, but we'll see how it goes. I also don't think he's... None of those guys, to me, command the baseball well enough to get the eighth inning. I just don't feel like they throw strikes consistently enough to be the kind of guy that can pitch in a real high-leverage, high-pressure situation. That requires a guy with good command, guts, and velocity. And I don't feel like those three guys have it. So the other thing that worries me about the Red Sox predicament at the moment, and again, long way to go, but Thornburg's out. Maybe he's the guy. They are, you know, they are dangerously close to that $237 million luxury tax threshold that they really don't want to go over. I said this, you know, weeks ago. I said it recently as well. They should have gotten rid of Brock Holt. They should have kept Marrero and got rid of Holt. Even if it saved them $1.5 million, it's another $1.5 million they could have put towards a reliever. So look, they can clear money along the way. They can move someone else. I'm not, you know, I get it. I just don't see why they kept Brock Holt, and this seems a very small thing. But to me, $2 million for him, $500,000 for Marrero, I'll save myself $1.5 million and get rid of Brock Holt. Because that, if that money comes into play later, that's really going to bug me to no end. 617-779-0985. We will continue with the criticisms of Alex Cora and look at some of the other things that went wrong in that game when we come back.
Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It just felt to me like they weren't totally on it, or maybe he just was uncomfortable answering the questions, right? First time in a big spot as a manager, it totally disintegrated on him. And so now he's trying to answer the questions, and he's making sure he's got all the details in there. Who the hell knows? But this is one thing to watch with the Red Sox. First-year manager, first-year pitching coach, managing that bullpen. I mean, it's a big thing. It's really the number one responsibility for any new manager, any new pitching coach. And Dana Lavangi is the pitching coach. And you've heard these. I feel obligated to say this because otherwise I feel like I'm withholding some sort of information. So I want to be totally transparent. I covered Lavangi for a long time. He was a bullpen catcher, then a scout. He's extremely respected, well-respected by the players, by people in the organization. He's got great baseball acumen. He's never pitched. And honestly, I don't even care about that. Dave Duncan was a terrific pitching coach. He was a catcher. So I don't care about that part of it. But the inexperienced part between Lavangi and Cora, it felt like it showed up yesterday. So one game, and better it happened now than in September, October. Terry Francona made mistakes his first year, too. Let's not forget that. And I can cite them for you if you want, specifically ones involving Curt Schilling. But, you know, we'll give him a pass, but yesterday was not good. And Joe Kelly, he's right, he was pathetic. Three walks. Red Sox, the Rays had 5 runs on 3 hits. So now it's David Price's turn. He goes out there. We'll get to him in just a second. Andrew's in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, happy Easter.
You too.
Thank you. I know it's early in the season just started, but I don't know. I feel like this season is just going to be a drawn-out headache between, I mean, like you just said, this is a brand-new manager and a brand-new pitching coach. And I just feel like, yeah, they're going to go out there and compete, and they're going to play. They're going to have fun. It'll be fun to watch, no doubt. But, I mean, I just feel like they'll make the playoffs and then trickle out at the end. And everyone will just be like, well, all right, fun season. Well, you know, they're going to grow as a team. It's a process next year.
Okay, so look, Andrew, I mean, I don't want to lie to you. That felt a lot like last year. Murray, you said this earlier today, right? That it felt like a continuation of really the last 2 years.
Yeah, you saw stupidity on the base paths. Two outs ran into on the base path. And then just the mess in the way that the eighth inning was handled. Like, Joe Kelly should have been pulled after that RBI double. He leaves him in, walks another batter, like you, that kind of implosion, like I had seen that under John Farrell. And then the excuse-making, or at least the, not so much excuse-making, but just the nonstop babbling, the inane babbling by Alex Cora after the game, it reminded me so much of what you would typically get after John Farrell when he would be, making excuses for some of these guys, or, you know, Cora saying that Joe Kelly had good stuff after that appearance. Like, come on. You see the sweat in his brow and that he's melting down. Again, after that RBI double, he should have been pulled out of the game. It just felt so much like what I've seen here the last couple of years. So, to the caller's point, this is where I feel like me and a lot of people are going to have a tough time getting into this team this season.
There's no question. If that's exactly what it felt like, which is why it was so disillusioning, disenchanting. You sit there going, you got to be kidding me. This is supposed to be a different team, and it's the same crap?
Not to mention the fact they only put up four runs. I've expected, you know, more pop from this lineup. That's what I've been promised with J.D. Martinez being added to it. Four runs against that pathetic outfit? Please.
So, Murray, the base running, too, which we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. They had the base running mistakes. You know, the other second guess, and Kelly was, he was in the game too long, was they have a lefty on the in the bullpen in Bobby Pointer, whom a lot of people don't know about, and we know very little about as fans, as viewers. And
but he's up and he's on the team.
He's a 25-year-old kid. He was a 15th-round draft pick, and he struck out a ton of guys in the minors. And I say ton, but better than a strikeout an inning. He was up, had the chance to pitch to two lefties. He didn't. And then, so again, he was up in the eighth inning. Cora was asked about Pointer, and here's what he said.
Alex, take us through your decision-making in the eighth. Did you think of, you know, Pointer at any point?
No. We're not going to put him in a spot like that. I mean, I know he can get people out, but in that spot, we got him up just, you know, to see where we go. We went in that inning, but I think Carson was the right guy. You know, he's a guy that keeps the ball down.
So we got him up, but no. We weren't putting him in there. No. Tough spot. Well, then what the hell's he on the team for?
Right. What are you trying to protect him from?
I mean, like,
if you don't think he's ready, then leave him down, you know, send him to AAA. Don't put him on the major league club.
If he's on the roster, he's usable. Otherwise, what the hell is he there for?
He's a decoy, Tony.
I mean, you're just chewing up roster spots? Like, so, and look, Shaughnessy pointed this out in his column today. Maybe that's a Dombrowski thing, but I look at that. I almost feel like after the game last night, it was like, hey, Alex, maybe you should think about calling Tony La Russa tonight. Like, give him a ring, and let's just make sure we're all on the same page. Matt's in Norwood. Go ahead, Matt. Matt, are you there?
Hey, Tony. Yep. I just wanted to talk really quickly about the makeup of this team versus when Terry Francona took it over, and we got a new manager in there. And I believe for sure that Cora is not going to become who he should be, probably for another 3 years or so. Why do I say that? I think this team's makeup is about team committee-style management. And whatever the team wants to do, Cora's going to follow along with what the team wants to do. And I'm not quite sure that, you know, we're going to see much, to the last caller's point, anything different than what we saw last year at this time.
So, again, that's the concerning thing, Matt. That's the concerning thing, is that you heard Cora talk, and you heard about Kimbrel in the eighth, aggressive approach at the plate, we're going to run the bases better, all of that. And they botched the eighth inning. They only scored four runs, two of which were a gift. They got thrown out twice on the bases. It's like, okay, so great. We got a manager we like better who's a more likable guy. But if it's the same team, what difference does it make? So that is something to get frustrated about. The one thing I would caution you about, it's one game. I mean, it is. It's one game. Okay? So let's see how it goes. The makeup of the team thing, though, when you talk about the character and makeup of the team, I said to you earlier, the last time they blew a lead like that on opening day, I think was in 03. Chad Fox in Tampa gave up a home run to Carl Crawford. But you know what the difference between that team and this one was? That lineup had balls beyond belief. I can't tell you how many times they blew a lead that summer, and their lineup came back because it was so damn good. Whether it was Todd Walker in that lineup or Manny, go right down the line, Ortiz, like they were loaded and they were relentless. Kevin Millar, Bill Miller, Varitek, they just came after you wave after wave after wave. We don't know if this team is that yet. Now, Bogaerts had a good day yesterday. Big step in the right direction. But over the long term, we need to see really whether this offense is indeed more potent, because if it is, maybe they'll blow a lead like that again later, and maybe they'll come back and win the game. Maybe they won't blow the lead because Tyler Thornburger will be here. Who the heck knows? So I'm not ready to say it's entirely like last year, let's write them off.
No, neither am I, but still, for game one, and the way that it looked, it was pretty annoying.
Oh, no question. Please. I was going to beat my head against the wall on the way home last night, Murray, listening to that thing. after they already started to blow the game. Now, look, Price goes to the mound tonight. And had it not been as eventful as an opener as it was, we would have spent a lot more time today talking about David Price. There may not be a single player on the Red Sox who has more at stake this year than David Price. Xander Bogaerts maybe, but that's about it. I don't know that anyone else has quite as much riding on it in terms of his reputation and his future as David Price does. And I think there's a good chance here that Price will have a good year, and you've heard me talk about this before. There's a Baseball Reporter's element on our website now, 98.5thesportshub.com. I wrote about Price today, and it gets into his approach on the mound. It's a far better read than it is a talk show topic, and I'm not saying that it was well written. I'm saying it's a written story more than it is a talk show topic, so you want to check it out there again. It's the Behind the Scenes blog on 98.5thesportshub.com. But a big night for Price tonight, right out of the gate already. They put pressure on him.
The Baseball Reporter's 98.5 The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporter's on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What is he doing? That had to have been some of the worst base running I have ever seen. What was he thinking?
It's time for the Baseball Reporter's base running blunders.
A sinking line drive is caught. Maybe a double play here. Throw back and got him. That doubles up Xander Bogaerts, who thought it was going to fall in. Betts trying to get back to throw. The tag. He's out. Well, that started with Ramos making an outstanding play there at home plate. He came up gunning.
Yeah, surprise monkey. He thought that ball was going to get by Ramos, and Ramos did make a very fine play, and then a quick throw to first base to get back.
So in case you didn't need me to remind you, last year the Red Sox, they ran into 81 outs on the bases, most in the major leagues. 81. One every two games.
Oh, my God. It was 10 more than I actually thought it was. I thought it was 71.
Most in the majors. That little bit at the beginning there, Murray did that last year because they sucked on the bases so bad. And we said, geez, we may not be able to use that anymore. Like, because who knows? Maybe they're better on the bases this year. No. Opening day, they go out there. They run like their hair's on fire. Twice they get nailed on the bases. Bogaerts got doubled off. Betts got picked off by the catcher. And the Betts mistake is probably less egregious than the Bogaerts one. In fact, not probably, it is. Because it was a good play by the catcher. Betts was going to advance if the ball skipped away. And the catcher made a good play. Betts was showing anticipation on the bases, and the catcher just gunned him down. In the case of Bogaerts, line drive to right field, you can't get doubled off there. So I thought I would look it up.
Tony, they're on pace for 324 outs on the bases this year.
As many home runs as Giancarlo Stanton's on pace for, Jimmy. But we'll get to him later. But I looked this up just now. Every team in the major leagues was scheduled to play yesterday, right? I don't think there were any rainouts, were there?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think there were.
I thought there was one in Pittsburgh.
Oh, was there?
Pittsburgh, Detroit, I believe.
Okay, so in any case.
Sorry.
Everybody in the majors was scheduled to play. Throughout Major League Baseball yesterday, how many guys do you think were thrown out on the bases in total?
Five?
In every game in the majors.
Five?
Two. Oh.
Four.
Oh.
Two of them by the Red Sox, right? So, again, already they are in the lead. No one else had more than one. They had two guys thrown out. Everyone else, zero. Nobody got thrown out on the bases. So the Red Sox are off to a fabulous start in that regard, too. And again, we had a caller say earlier, it feels like 2016 all over again already. Already it feels that way. And it's too early to say that definitively, but there's no question that if you walked away from that game with that sentiment yesterday, there was good reason, because it didn't feel a hell of a lot different than a year ago. Michael is in Medford. Michael, what do you got?
Well, did you guys watch the eighth inning? I know you were on Felgo till six, but did you watch the game, the eighth inning?
Yes.
The play that caught me most uniquely was when Smith threw the ball to the backstop with the bases loaded and two outs. By instinct, I'm assuming he's diving for home. I'm looking at Smith. He's nowhere even close to covering home plate. And once they didn't run, I'm thinking, gee, they caught a break. But actually, they didn't. Because if he had scored, that would have left runners on second and third. and they would have had to walk span. And God knows what would have happened, and we'd only be talking about Cora's half of his mistake.
Okay, so look,
with what you're saying, but that's something that hardly ever happens in the major leagues. If a ball, once you see it get by the catcher and go into the backstop, your instinct is to go, especially with two outs. You're running to home plate, and that's that, and because you still got runners at second and third. You're only down by two at the point. But
so wait, Michael, if it was the batter before Span, there was only one out.
I remember the announcer said that nobody wants to make the third out at third base. The bases were loaded. So that told me it was two outs.
Okay, so again, look, all I'm telling you is that, you know, you can talk about all the little variables that change the flow of a game. If someone doesn't get doubled off, if someone tries to advance, the bottom line is the Red Sox had a 4-0 lead in the eighth inning against a horrible team and a horrible lineup, and they couldn't throw a strike. Joe Kelly couldn't throw a strike. Carson Smith was all over the place. And they ultimately blew a game that they absolutely should win. In fact, all of last year, they didn't blow a game where they had a 3-run lead or more. So already they have done that. Now, what is worrisome to me long-term is that eighth inning. Who's going to pitch it? Because you're not going to have Kimbrell go two-out saves all year long. They're just not going to do it. They did that in the early part of last year, and then they put an end to it quickly because they felt like they were running Kimbrell into the ground. So maybe Tyler Thornburg comes back and is that guy. And you know what? I will admit, shame on me for not foreseeing this earlier. Last year in the middle of the season, the Red Sox went out and got an eighth inning guy because they didn't have one. They went out and acquired Addison Reed from the Mets. And then, as it turned out, John Farrell didn't use him in the playoffs, but that's another story for another day. So they let Reed go. And I was dumb enough to not say, well, geez, if you let the eighth inning guy go, then you got to go get another one. I sort of looked at it and said, well, Thornburg will be that guy, or Smith will be that guy. That's the idea. They acquired those guys initially to be in that seventh, eighth inning area anyway, and that's how it's going to work. The more I see Smith, the less impressed I am. Really. And not just because of the elbow. So I don't know if his velocity still hasn't come all the way back or not, but he's all over the place. He does not command the baseball, and maybe that's part of the reason he's hard to hit. But he's all over the place. Barnes, I've never loved. He's okay, but he's a sixth or seventh inning guy. Yesterday he got the seventh and pitched exceptionally well. Kelly, to me, looks terrified every time you put him in a big spot. And the bottom line is, of those three guys, I don't trust any of them to throw a strike in a key situation. And that's really what it comes down to throw let alone a quality strike. Because I feel you're going to get what you got yesterday, which is they tighten up and all of a sudden guys are on base and here you go, now you're in trouble. If you are blowing a 4-0 lead to the Tampa Bay Rays in the eighth inning, you can blow one to anybody. Mike is in West Roxbury.
Hey, Maz, how you doing?
Good.
Had a Sox point really briefly. You guys have simulcast on, not the show, but Felger Maz on CSN NBC. And I love watching on that. But I just have kind of a complaint is that how come in the middle of the day they play infomercials? Like, I have to watch about the watermelon that makes...
Mike, I got nothing to do with that part of it. I really don't. I mean, is there something else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Cora. Maz, I think he sucks, honestly. And, you know, this reminds me of the year when we missed out on Teixeira, and then we ended up picking up everything else that was left on the market, and, you know, we missed out on the big fish. I really feel like the media and everyone has given this guy a pass. I mean, one guy that's doing awesome is Cassidy on the Bruins. And before he got started to coach, all I heard about how he was going to be awful, how he was arrogant, about his marital issues. And I feel like he's the great one. And Cora's just going to be another Farrell, but he even has a bigger ego than Farrell.
Okay, so look, I don't know what Bruce Cassidy has to do with Alex Cora. Maybe your complaint is about the media. I will tell you that, look, I think Cora's a bright guy. I think he's a personable guy. I think he's going to communicate with his players, and clearly that was a problem last year. Can he manage a game in the eighth inning? I don't know. I mean, he's probably going to have to learn it. Like, this notion that he was prepared to manage in the big leagues, whether it was for the Red Sox or anything else, or anywhere else, rather, is crazy. Because he'd never done it. And I just think that you're talking about the kind of challenge of managing a staff over 162 games. And so we can all look at, maybe this is something we forgot, that you look at it with Cora and you say, he's starting at ground zero with this team. I mean, they competed against the Red Sox last year. The Astros did. But it's not like Cora sat there and said, geez, if I were building that bullpen, how would I use it? I mean, he was worried about his own thing as the bench coach in Houston. But I do think that when you then sit down and you go to camp, we know what Joe Kelly is. We know what Matt Barnes is. We also know what Carson Smith is, or at least I think we have a pretty good idea. Cora goes into camp with a clean slate for all those guys, and maybe there was some preconception on those guys by Dana Lavangie, but again, he's starting a new job too, so in a lot of ways he's going to give everybody a clean slate. So Cora has to have somewhere to start, and this is where I think he's not guilty, and you have to give him a little latitude. He's got to start somewhere. So he looked at it and said, you know what, we're going to go Barnes in the seventh. He was asked about this after the game yesterday, and he said what dictated it was matchups. Let's see. Okay, because again, the way he answered the Kimbrel questions, I'm not sure there was any sort of clear answer there at all. But so we're going to have to see how this one evolves. And I told you how he uses the bullpen. I said this yesterday. Who comes in when? We are learning on the fly as Cora is. Okay, we're going to see how he looks at it at the beginning and what changes he makes as he goes along. So he decided Barnes in the seventh, Kelly in the eighth. Presumably it was going to be Kimbrel in the ninth. Then when things broke down, he went to Smith. So maybe he looks at Kelly and Smith as being equals, or maybe Smith is a guy he'd really rather use earlier in the game, but he used him there because he didn't have a choice. I don't know. We're going to have to see more there before we can make some sort of determination. But, you know, Cora doesn't have the background or the reservoir or the history that we do with Kelly, with Barnes, with Smith, so that when you watch these guys and you're beating the head against the wall going, here we go, last year all over again, he doesn't feel that. Now, what happens tonight? I don't know. David Price on the mound? I'm interested in seeing how it goes. We had a couple of people today complain that Chris Sale came out of that game after six innings and 92 pitches. To me, that was a foregone conclusion. If you didn't see that one coming, that's on you. Sale has faded just about every year of his major league career. The Red Sox need him at the end of the year. What they should have done last year, what they're doing with Sale now, which is taking a little of the load off early. Let's see what he's like in August and September this time around. And then hopefully he'll be strong in October too, and they'll ride him then. Because I really do think it's going to take a borderline disaster for them to miss the playoffs with the way the landscape is in the American League. And you know what? They're going to treat Price the same way. So as it pertains to Price, and again, I wrote about this on the website today. It's an easier read than it is a listen. But I'm going to tell you in general terms what to watch for with David Price. And this is a season thing. It's not a nightly thing. Because matchups change and you pitch guys differently. But overall, what you should look for from David Price is aggressiveness. You want Price to throw hard and in on right-handed batters. If he starts nibbling with his cutter, you know, trying to backdoor it from the left-handed batter's box against right-handed batters, bad sign. Price, to me, pitched his best game as a member of the Red Sox last July against the Yankees in a Sunday night game. I looked it up today. Eight innings, seven hits, six were singles and a double. He didn't walk anybody. He had eight strikeouts, one per inning. He threw 107 pitches and 75 of them were strikes. And all of that aside, what I remember was aggressiveness, and the number bears it out. He threw four curveballs in that game based on the log that I saw, and no changeups in 107 pitches. He used hard stuff. He attacked. He was aggressive. To me, if Price is doing that, a lot like he pitched in the postseason, then that's a good sign. It means he's healthy, and it means his head's in the right place. Because to me, if Price starts nibbling, to me, that's a bad sign and an indication that, that he's not totally confident in either his stuff or he's not comfortable on the mound or any of those things.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of it.